space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life, a new civilization, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Retrek. I'm Captain Jim, and with me, of course, are Admiral Elliot.
Hi there.
And Dr. Squee.
Dragon!
And we're here to talk about the latest episode of Lower Decks, Fully Dilated, and the Enterprise episode, Cabin Creek, which was referenced within it. And this week, we've had a couple of weeks away from the ongoing multiverse incursion anomaly storyline, but it's very much back with a vengeance this week with the Purple Enterprise.
And there is I
was just about to say, from your camera angle, actually looks like you've deliberately put a purple tint on it for this week, Ian.
There is a little bit. Actually, I see what you mean. Yeah. I have no idea what is the lamp, but might be the light.
I just thought you'd maybe done it sort of because purple's an option. If you've got purple as an option, why not?
I think it's the lamp next to me. Yeah. That's a really good. Yeah, totally on purpose. Yeah.
Intentional.
Speaking of intentional, I don't know if you guys picked up on it, but I've made some notes. Unfortunately, some deleted because my computer crashed. But I think the writers this week were having fun with how much innuento they could sneak into this.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Jim didn't pick up on it when we were talking Twin Peaks early in the week. I asked him, but
it's because I'm an innocent flower. I don't notice this sort of stuff. You two will have to educate me as we go along this episode. I mean,
I've kind of got four on the list. Can I just quickly just rattle through them? So we've got Purple Enterprise. Wonder if the carpets match the hull. Definitely. The title of it, to be honest with you, I mean, I know like that's usually used for pregnancy, but kind of suggestive. Ransom, our friends on the Purple D left us a little surprise. That sounded naughty to me. And Purple, I think not coincidental.
Yeah, I mean, the purple a Purple D sounds suggestive.
Exactly. We've got...
Definitely the whole match in the carpets.
There was the bit with the giant melons, which Tandy says she can hardly get her melons through the door. Of course, the OG reference from near the end of the episode, so sorry to spoilers, but of course they mention, he really is fully functional, which we all know about as normal. So, you know, it's all about sex. So, yeah.
I just think you're both filthy. I did not notice any of this.
It's maybe because since I've moved down south that I'm noticing all this filth.
That's it. Yeah, dirty minds.
South Yorkshire. Just for anyone listening, South Yorkshire. I'm in Southampton, like right on the. Anyway.
So there's a Purple Enterprise, which has come through one of the fissures, anomalies, whatever you want to call them. And it is just literally a purple universe by the look of it. Everything has a purple tint to it. Other than that, it seems to be more or less exactly the same as our universe. But presumably the Enterprise D survived longer in their universe.
Yeah, well, the only thing which I'd point out is not everything could be purple in the universe because Data comes up with a wonderful line like... it just seems if you've got purple as an option, which means he obviously recognizes there are other cuts. So maybe, some of things must not be purple.
I think it's maybe that all the people are purple, so everything purple to match.
I'm just thinking maybe it's not all the people because we only see Data. So, and Data's synthetic and the Enterprise is synthetic. So maybe it's just like metal-y stuff. Is purple.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because like if gray is a neutral color to us, as referenced here. Maybe purple's neutral to them, so it could be skin color, it could be metal colored, like you suggest. Something like that, I think, is probably the dealio. I did love when Freeman just says at the beginning, she goes, it's like, they came through the rift escaping some Tashiyar clones or something. I don't know, Eilish track.
It was fighting evil Tashiyars,
clones, And of course, you can't have a mirror Enterprise episode without Tashiyar, and I'm surprised Wesley didn't crop up, but he's been featured in the Trekkerverse a few times recently, so maybe they're giving him rest. But usually if you go to Mirror Universe, you're gonna get some mention, you're gonna get Will Wheaton back, and you're gonna get Tashiyar back.
Wheaton,
now that Will Wheaton can actually go into all of the running series,
that's it. Wesley.
Time traveler now, so there's no reason we won't won't shoehorn him in before the end of this.
That's it. Wesley could be the...
We can get him turn up in Strange New Worlds. We can have him show up in Academy.
I think Jim's going to say something, which I've just thought as well. Go on, Jim.
I was just going to say, to use like a Marvel term, Wesley could be the anchor being of the... Star Trek universe now. You know, he can appear everywhere.
I like that. But I was going to say, actually, because of all the rifts and everything, I know we're expecting some Tholian action, but I wonder, as a traveler, time rifts could be him behind it.
He
could be the reveal. And it would be a it would be very like last season where you got Locarno behind it all.
You've also got that thing, though. Like we've just referenced there, the Enterprise Day has lasted longer in their universe. Or is the actually time differences? That there's a time difference with things, so...
Maybe. There isn't as much of a subplot this episode, really. The main plot is that the girls have to go down to the planet to retrieve what's left, whereas the boys are just drinking because they've read that Mirror Boimler enjoys this particular cocktail. And that's all the plot they get, really.
I've got a point though on this. Well, just because we know that Boimler, he's the one that spills the drink, but then it's... Rutherford, who comes up with he starts going, it's like, that was a month while you said that sentence. Oh no, that was another month. Oh no. I'm just like, just because Rutherford is a game on his science, he's obviously panicking here, because if it was at that rate, it would have been several years they were stuck there as opposed
to
about a year. So you know Rutherford's flustered, because he would never make a mistake like that usually, but it works in the plot still.
It was a bit of a joke, but I think you're right. Is it just less than a year, something like that?
It was about a year, somewhere around there,
Because the conceit of the planet is that it's one of those planets, like in the Voyager episode, Blink of an Eye, where time passes differently. So
there was a couple of obvious choices, wasn't there, for our companion episode, and Blink of the Eye was the other obvious choice.
Yeah, that and Carbon Creek were the only ones which hadn't been covered already that came up, mainly. There's always arguments you can make for loads.
I had a feeling that we'd done a Blink of the Eye as well.
No, we haven't.
All right.
No, I'd remember that. See, it's rare that we do a really good Voyager episode, so I would have remembered if we'd done one of the classics.
I was getting all excited about In Light, but I didn't realize you'd covered it on Road to Picard. So.
We did In Light.
Yeah.
But that would have been another one as well. But I think we found a good one with Carbon Creek. Mm. I think thematically it fits most closely. It's very much inspired.
And it's also actually mentioned by name in the episode.
If we hadn't covered any of them, I would say the perfect match to this would have been Time's Arrow, but that was definitely covered because head, you've got data-centric, you've got so many points which match through. But I think we picked a good one.
And we're introduced, once they get to the planet, to my new favorite character, which is the Lurker, Nell. He's brilliant.
Again, like I mentioned this before in this series, it seems to just, I've noticed it particularly, but it's like, it's the fact that they make you realize there's genres of Star Trek I never put together in my head. Like there is an archetype of a character who is always the one who's suspicious of the person who's just come into town and wants to drop them in all through the episode. And it's like, before they said that though, I never would have pointed that out to anyone, but it's like, now it seems so obvious. There's always that character. Very well.
And it's just, it is just played so well with his noises and everything and the way he carries on. Yeah, he's my new favourite character.
In Trino Deck Style as well, where everyone else would be like so worried about them, they just like, oh, fuck off. They just basically own him all through the episode. It's great.
Yeah, like the first sort of confrontation with him is when they first retrieve Data's head and he's, what's that behind your back? And he's like, I'm going to juggle.
Oh, I just learned to do that now.
well, the first one before that's when they first arrive, and it's like,
you're right, yeah.
Have you got that'll be? Would you like to glumps or what? Was it glumpas?
Something like that.
Glumpas. We haven't got any glumpas. You've no glumpas.
Hey, we were just looking in that swamp for glumpas. In the swamp? Yeah, it was a dumb idea, right? It's like just everything is basically just having to piss off every time. It's crazy.
And I love the fact that it's not just that he's spying on them. It transpires that he is just a lurker. Like, the whole village is like, will you stop it with your lurking? Yeah. It's just that's his whole character and everything. I love him. I think he's great. Then Mariner decides, well, you know, if we're going to be here, you know, Captain Picard learnt the flute and everything, so if I'm going to live my probe life, I'm going to... That could sound a bit dirty.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was one I had on my list before it deleted, before my computer crashed.
And she's like, right, I need to do this. I need to learn the flute. I need to go and make friends with everybody.
I need to become a meaningful member of the society.
Yeah.
In fact, let's highlight the fact that she says probe in the same sentence as flute. I think that makes it twice as pervy.
Mean, when you're talking pervy flute stuff, you still can't top Alien Covenant with its
I thought you were gonna go American Pie.
Oh no, yeah, I mean that's dirty, but
referencing, isn't it?
That's intentionally dirty, whereas in Alien Covenant it's like, ooh, you hold the shaft and I'll do the fingering. And they're like, oh, okay. Dirty Ridley Scott. The other plot line, if you like, is that they're going to decide on a senior science officer. So you've got Tendi and Talin trying to one-up each other all the way through. And Talin is winning.
Talin isn't actually trying.
You're right.
Talin's just trying to do good stuff for the mission because they're stuck.
And I love the whole thing of, like, her way of trying to earn money is by creating a beauty product, basically. Just give them slightly...
Yeah.
Which, I mean, like Data says, it's like, I'm not sure how the Prime Directive applies to giving them slightly nicer skin.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, she finds a way of doing it where it's not going to impact everything. And, yeah, it's by, first of all, making this enormous fruit. And then putting it into bottles and making skincare stuff and hair stuff and everything. And it is funny seeing Tendi getting more and more exasperated. And like you say, Talin's just trying to be helpful, but everything she does just gets Tendi more and more frustrated by it because it's all really good science stuff.
And I kind of like the fact that Tendi does point out that it's the fact that... that she kind of has just been home and that kind of brought out this side in her, which was a nice reason, because it's like, for a while it was like, oh, Tendi doesn't usually act like this, but it kind of makes sense. She'd been very bickery with her sister, so that it brings out that side in her. Yeah. And family's perhaps the biggest trigger for old behaviors coming out in us. So yeah.
For Orions as well, particularly. Yeah.
Rose, hello, Captain Doctor. Good evening to all in chat and retreat.
Good evening.
Good evening, Rose.
And there's a bit where while Tallinn, we just find out Tallinn's built a windmill, which, you know, every time Tendy talks to us, I've just done this. But then Snell turns up again and Mariner just hits him with a broom to get rid of it, which I love. Yes. It's just, she's having absolutely none of it. She's like, go away. You're so irritating. And yeah, then Tendy activates Data's head, or purple Data's head, and wants to kind of draw on his experience and his advice and everything to do better science-y stuff.
Can I give a bit of a nod to Brent Spiner here? Just because, like, a lot of the time when they're a bit older, and even if they try to use up their voice, it doesn't work as well. You know, it's just, it's no one's fault, but, you know, as people get older, their voices change. I think he recreates a young Data's voice really well here. Like,
his, yeah, I thought it did.
It sounds really boyish. I don't know if they used any filter or anything, but it's marvelous.
No, it did, and notably different to how his voice has sounded in Picard. Yeah. So maybe
it is a filter.
Maybe, or maybe they just said do young Data, because however he's done it. Yeah, I agree with you, though. It was, very impressive.
Because even when he was the android, whatever version of Data he was before the one who's older, it was one who was meant to be the same age as Data, I think. So,
yeah.
Like, and it didn't sound younger there. So it's like, whatever voice he's meant to do, it was just great. Yeah.
I did like the conversation between Tandy and Data, where she's trying to find out, when she explains that he's lost his body. It's happened to me before. Oh, how did you get out of it last time? Oh, well, I just hung around in a cave for 500 years and waited for Picard, myself and somebody wearing a silver jumpsuit, because it was an unnamed character in TNG.
the wording he used around the guy with the silver jumpsuit, like a guy with a silver jumpsuit did something to the way he worded it, I think also could go into the innuendo file, but I can't remember the bloody word.
I just like how it was, though, because it was an unnamed character in the TNG episode Time Zero. He just went, and some guy in a silver jumpsuit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then Mariner, in a quest to try and impress people and fit in, she puts out the eternal flame, which makes them all think they've been cursed or that they're going to die or whatever. And that's very sort of drawing on these archetypal stories where they've got something of value.
You've done something. One member of the crew has done something that it's like, Wesley trips over a fence.
Yeah.
Oh no, you've got to be executed because you.
Well, she references. She references that, doesn't she? She says something like, "Oh, 2 months for doing this. Like, you know, this makes the Edo look lenient." Or she says something like that.
I'll even actually. It's another kind of one of those things about her character development as well. If you think about it, because here she's trying to just live her best life. She's trying to grow as a person by learning new skills like the flute, whatever. Mm. And every time she tries to, she does something like classic Mariner might have done on purpose.
Yeah,
it's quite funny because it's like, for fuck's sake, I'm trying to do the right thing here, but I end up in jail. But
twice.
In a minute. I don't want to. It's great.
And then when the recall signal finally goes off, this is when Snell attacks and he sees Data's head and he said, well, tell that to your non-horned demon head or something.
Yeah, wait till I tell the rest of the visit village that my lurking keeps them safe.
That's the best bit, because he actually leaves. Then he comes back into frame just to go...
That is a lovely character. Just the noise, it's just perfect.
Yeah.
Like, every one of these characters, you feel like goes, meh, even if they actually don't.
Yeah, it's the fact that he's gone, and then it's as if he remembers, oh, I've got to do my catchphrase. So he comes back to go, meh. And then we get the conversation between Tendi and Talin, and Talin's saying, oh no, I'm gonna remove myself from consideration because
I didn't realize it was so important for you.
I've shown that my communication's not good enough, sort of thing.
And it's a kind of subtle thing, but I feel like it's a kind of very Star Trek message. If you don't support your friends and you get kind of like jealous and you react to that, you can end up bashing their self-confidence and everything. Whereas if you build them up, they work together as they do in the end in the role. I thought it was nice.
Yeah. And well, we're jumping a bit ahead, but we do get the perfect Star Trek ending where it's like, both of you are going to be the science officer.
That's why I didn't out and out say it. I didn't want to preempt you.
See, yeah, well, ruined, yeah.
You didn't even say spoilers before that.
Well, that's why I didn't actually say that.
I wasn't having a go at you. It's that bloody Northerner.
I didn't think you were having a go either, right?
It reminds me of there's an episode of Buffy, what's it called? Oh, I can't remember the name of the episode, but it's when they have Slayer Fest 93 or whatever year it was. Homecoming. It's the Homecoming episode. And it's all about who's going to be Homecoming Queen, Buffy or Cordelia, all the way through. Mm. Then they get to the end and they go, for the first time ever, we have joint Homecoming Queens. And you think it's going to be Buffy and Cordelia, but it's two other people that we've never heard of all episode. but in this one it is our two episodes who get to be our two characters who get to be the joint science officer. But the way they escape is Data chews off the rope and he says, I learnt this from Worf. Which, do we remember Worf chewing any rope, or is the universe only?
And also he goes it was another one, as he gnaws on the ropes, she tells him to go out or something. It's another suggestive thing here.
No, this is when Mariner comes out with, you really are fully functional.
Yes, while he's chewing on the gnawing at the ropes around just above her waist. I'm just saying. the visuals as well with the...
I am trying to think if there has been an episode where Worf's time...
Yeah, I can't think of one.
But it does seem like a very Worf thing to do.
Worf could do it.
Why do you think he uses his teeth sharpener? It's just in
case. Well, he does. Yeah. Like,
that was the best thing ever when he got that off Nugs there going away to.
And then when they manage to get rid of Snell, all the villagers turn on him. And I do feel a little bit bad for him because his lurking did pay off in this, but they don't believe him.
Well, it's the whole sequence where I just really enjoy Mariner. Every time she goes, right, we're out of here, let's figure out. It's like, now we've got to deal with this. Oh, for Christ. Like, just everything, just like every time she gets here to clean them out of there. And she's following every rule, as I said earlier. And still, it's like everything just goes tits up one thing at a time. It's just great.
But she does get her payoff, which is, no, you've made a community in prison with the other prisoners.
Yeah.
I love that.
And he's like, and two of us are murderers.
I don't want to know that. It's all right if my friends come with me. No, I tried.
that about sort of wraps up the episode. They beam back and we finish with Mariner playing a soap flute.
And
which
they're
presumably
not being very happy with Rutherford or Boimler.
No, and rightly so, because they made a mess of that.
And they were doing stuff that are against regulations.
Yeah.
No food or drink in the transporter room. And there's a reason why there's no food or drink in the transporter room.
I just still love, in the far-flung future, where you've got all this technology, still the best way, if you spill some drink, which you're not meant to have in there, but like there must be some situation where something might spill on the console, like the protocol is take off your shirt and dab it with that. That's going to be the best way. Yeah. Like, there's no other better way. Like they've even suggested the Enterprise itself clean, so you assume other ships
have
a timer. No,
like,
it's just...
Like the pair of them obviously panicked of what they'd done, knew they'd done wrong, so didn't own up to it because they could have gone straight to one of the other transporter rooms to beam them up.
Yeah, or they could have beamed the liquid off the transporter panel.
Also, actually, I wonder, because, you know, I was talking about the Enterprise. They've got that kid out to self-clean. Cerritos, they're going, second contact. We'll just check out this model.
Yeah, Cerritos probably ain't got it. That's probably where all the cleaners
They will have more than one transporter room.
By any of the transporters, there's a panel going, if you spill something on here, like, it's got a diagram of someone taking the shirt off.
Yeah, you have to do that.
It's the only ship which doesn't have self-cleaning. Like, that class.
It wouldn't surprise me.
They could have probably phased it off, to be fair.
Yeah, on a low setting. Yeah, could have evaporated it off, but it's got alcohol in it.
Mind you, it works perfectly because it's those two are just knuckleheads. You know, it's like they probably could have done all these things we're mentioning, including self-cleaning, but they were like,
I honestly think they just panicked. And
yes, they are.
That's the first thing. We've got to get this off.
It's just lovely when they come in. It's like, transport malfunction. You know, these things happen.
Yeah, but it maroons them for a long time because of the weird ass planet. But no, another good episode. We're in a really strong run at the minute with Lower Decks.
Let's be honest. Has there actually been a bad episode?
No.
In 5 seasons of Lower Decks? No,
I think the most we said was one episode was like okay. Like one particular.
I think you're going to. Yeah, you're almost going, it was okay, but there haven't been a bad episode. There's been
There hasn't, yeah.
And every other show, I think, apart from Strange New Worlds, touch wood so far, we can say that there's been bad episodes.
There was one I made an argument for on Strange New Worlds, but yeah, that's neither here nor there right now.
I would say
particularly with this, where they've got Data though, and of course Brent Spiner is wonderful in this. What's really great though is, and I'm so glad he was there, but if he had been, I still think this episode would have been great. That's how good they are.
Yeah,
but
obviously
by having a purple Data in there, you're just dying up 100%.
It didn't need Data to make it a good episode.
No,
but having Data there was great.
It made it just outstanding on top of being great.
Yeah,
I mean, he was even the one who suggested them working together, which was really nice. Like, Data influenced events.
It was like the flake on top of the sprinkles, on top of the cherry, on top of the cream, on top of the ice cream.
Because you sort of don't want the guest cast. You don't want the guest cast to be the solution. It's got to be the cast who are the main thrust of the solution. Yeah. However, some nice little character development point he helps with by going, hey, I've got a suggestion for the officer, make them both. Perfect use of him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Didn't overshadow the regular cast and was just a fun addition to it. So back to Enterprise then and Carbon Creek. And this is the second episode of season 2.
Yeah.
So we wrap up the Shockwave 2-parter, which we covered when we covered the Temporal Cold War. And spoilers for that, not that great. But this one, I remember when I did my most recent rewatch of Enterprise, when you get to this one, I was like, wow, the quality has really picked up season 2. It feels like a breath of fresh air, this episode.
I think this episode is really, really clever. And it leaves you thinking as well.
I mean, it was good enough, but it's like the only thing I did feel is like, which is a sort of constant thing with Enterprise, is it doesn't do anything particularly new. Like there's other episodes which do everything they do in this, and it's like, I think that was Enterprise's biggest problem was, this felt like sort of to the Naked Now to the Naked Time, like being an updated next gen episode of the original series. This is an updated version of like some of the original series ones, especially where they take the clothes off the line. There's kind of those tropes.
Like we've seen it where Spock's been in the past and that in the original series. So we have it. So we've even had with that, we've had Vulcans in the past before.
And it's the fact they don't even make any effort to make T'Pol look any different in the past. It's like just exactly the same haircut. We could just give her a little fringe or like a different fringe or something. No,
she does brush her hair so it covers her ears.
Oh yeah, first later, but when she comes on the screen, it's just her. Like, I mean, I get you.
Yeah, it's like yeah, we know it was your grandmother or whatever, but genetics can be strong between grandparents and grandchildren. But come on, identical,
including like, haircut. That's like, what I mean. Yeah,
like
if yeah, been, yeah, I see if what you
been,
mean.
If
now.
It had been a male character, they'd have given them a goatee.
Yeah.
Just give her slightly longer hair, something just to.
Yeah, they'd have done something because, let's face it, it's a wig that she's wearing anyway. I assume it's a wig she was wearing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, please say. She had longer hair, I think.
Yeah.
Throughout. Yeah.
She did because when she appears in Stargate, she's got a normal hair, very long.
Yeah.
So the setup of the episode is right, T'Pol, you've been on the ship for a year. And then I thought this was really out of line from Captain Archer because he sort of goes, oh, while you're on shore leave, you went to this place. Why did you do that? Like, mind your own.
Can I also, like, I mean, how detailed are these Starfleet records and why the fuck did he look that specific thing?
Yeah,
like, I mean, I get they look at their service record. Why would they look at their shore leave plans from over the years? So he knows where she was at any point.
Mind your own, Captain Archer.
I was off to say the reason for this could be because the Vulcans are still being funny with Starfleet, aren't they, at this point? So maybe. Starfleet is maybe... does watch the Vulcans very closely, that because the Vulcans normally maybe stick to San Francisco and this place to don't go off on trips on your own. So he's maybe come up that, well, just have a quiet word without anything and see if you can find out what he's doing. Yeah, and I do wonder if
that's what they're doing.
Well, why would you that they're doing secret surveillance.
Well, exactly. So he shouldn't go, oi, T'Pol, I know where you've been. He should be like, shh, shh.
Well, maybe because he's not a very good spy when they've said to try and find this out. And that's one why he's a staff, like, and that's why he's a captain of a spaceship and not a spy.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I will say, I mean, he could be working for Section 31. No, that comes up later. Anyway. One thing I thought throughout was, though, that Trip and Archer, like, Trip, I think, is always meant to be the one who kind of, like, tries to take the mick a bit with T'Pol. But Archer joins in a bit too much here. It's like, for fuck's sake, you've invited around for dinner and you're just taking the piss all throughout. It's like Sisko and talking about the Ferengi or anyone talking about the Ferengi, basically.
Yeah.
There's some racist shit. That's all I'm saying gets Vulcans in this episode. They're just taking the piss around the whole thing.
There's a lot of problems.
Archer is. But
like they do say, there's a big thing, because like, this point out, the longest the Vulcan has been served on an Earth ship before has been 2 weeks, since T'Pol corrects it to 10 days, because there's a lot of them not getting on as... It's not the same as what we're brought up with it with TOS, that they all get on really well, and TNG, that etc. from the movies. We actually seen earlier than this when the Vulcans were all sort of, no, you're not going out into space yet. No, we're not letting you do this. No, we're not sharing technology with you. No, we're going to hold you back and all that. No, and I mean, there's a lot of resentment at this time between Earth and Vulcan.
And you're right. I think that actually, I will give Enterprise, that was a lovely wrinkle. Interesting idea. Didn't always work. But I mean, the thing is, the way it's presented, though, is always as if it's like the Vulcans being dicks. And they do make some concessions later where Archer does sort of say, it's like, look, we appreciate what you've done, but now we've got to step out on our own. He does get a bit more diplomatic. But the way they're dicks towards T'Pol, I'm going, I don't blame them for not wanting to hang around with us or to keep us in our place, because we're just assholes to them and take the piss out of their very way of being.
You spy on my holiday, then you invite me to dinner and take the piss.
And maybe drink when you know that I don't drink alcohol. Even though I'm Vulcan and it was established in TOS that it'll have absolutely no effect on my constitution.
They're probably making her eat meat as well, even though they know she's a vegetarian. Horrible people.
She does do some nice, subtle, slightly drunk acting, I thought. I thought that was suggested in here that she was getting a little bit tipsy. There was a couple of times when she drinks and she goes, So maybe she's a Vulcan lightweight, like most Vulcans can handle. She's like, right, I'll tell you a fucking story, lad. I don't know why she's
saying
that. I don't know.
So this is the thing. It's T'Pol telling a story about her great grandmother, who looks exactly like her, as you point out. And yeah, they're investigating Sputnik. They end up crash landing, and they make the way to Cabin Creek. And there's the bit where they, oh, we have to blend in, so let's steal the clothes. And then T'Pol gets changed behind this sheet, and we see her shadow, which leaves nothing to the imagination.
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like this was a touch unnecessary, perhaps a little bit exploitative.
It possibly was, but I don't think it was unnecessary from my point of view in any way, shape, or form.
I'm not saying it was unpleasant.
I mean, two things spring to mind.
It's like there was something that they did do this with Enterprise, didn't they? And it has been admitted. They did try to sexualize it to get viewers to watch it for things. They did the same with Voyager when they brought Jerry Ryan in to play Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
And credit to Jerry Ryan, she turned out not to be just a blonde bimbo there for eye candy, that she's a bloody great actress and really developed the character she was playing.
Yeah.
Well, let's for a start, just say it's like, I mean, I think Seven of Nine's catsuit like pales to the way they kind of treat her, and that wasn't idea, you know, that was pretty exploitative, as you say.
And but, it was done deliberately. They do the same with T'Pol, and this is part of it, and they do it like when they've got the gel going and all that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to get onto.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I could jump on that, because it's like, first of all, I was sort of going to jokingly come up with a list of kind of rude things in this. They give you fuck all the dialogue when it comes in innuendo, Enterprise, right? I was just going to like purposely take stuff out of context. Nothing. But then I see this scene and go, no, they've just put it on Front Street instead. And it's like, you see that in the reflection, you see a Nips, basically. You can very clearly. And then they're not content with the fact that you saw it once when she comes out. It's like, well, that's backwards. Well, I better go and change again. And it's like you see her starting to take off again. It's like, oh, come on, was once not enough?
Yeah.
Isn't it in a contract? She's got to get a kiss off at least once an episode. And
I mean,
why the fuck would she not get how that would, like, the Vulcans aren't dumb and they've got clothes. You know, why would that be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. She can get a kiss off. That's the only reason. But
it
anyway.
It must have been in a contract. Once every episode, we have to see your nipples in something. Yeah. We haven't got the decon chamber here, so this will have to do. Other than that, it was a nice mirror, as I say, to the original series Enterprise, where...
Yeah, and right down to him just wearing a hat to cover the ears. Why didn't they just tell everybody he was Chinese? We know that's what you do to hide a Vulcan.
He's Chinese and he fell in a rice factory, in a rice machine when
mechanical
he was young.
Rice picker.
Oh, I forgot that. God, that's not ideal.
And I do enjoy the bit where he goes and starts playing pool to win money. Like, no, it's just geometry. I can work this out.
It's simple child's geometry. It's not a complicated game.
I really enjoyed all that. I thought that was great fun.
I did, though, enjoy it. It's like, if I win, I get her, basically. It's like, sure.
That's been done in so many different shows, hasn't it? Where you've had it, Knight Rider, where you'll have Kittle microwave the dice so you can win it. What did they call it? I can't remember the name of it. When it play with dice.
Craps.
And stuff. And we've had it where Data's card counted in the Royal. And it's a trope that gets used a lot. That how are we going to get money to get out of this? Oh, we'll use our talents to gamble.
Well, there's also that whole thing of like, because it's set in the 50s, there was a thing of like, I'll play and I get your woman if I win. And then sort of by this stage, it was almost a trope in itself of the thing of, I will do that. And then the woman going, no, we bloody well won't. And it's like, I got this. And then they, you know, it's like, it's almost a trope at this stage.
Yeah.
Given the what they'd done with the washing line, I did get a sinking feeling that the Vulcan wasn't going to win at pool, and T'Pol was going to end up, or T'Pol's grandma was going to end up being this guy's slave or something. But thankfully, they don't go that way.
There was a thing, apparently. I read this a little while ago. Apparently, originally, if Enterprise had gone on, they were going to say that T'Pol was secretly half-human. Maybe they were going to relate it back to this somehow.
Possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I
heard that it was off to come out that she was half-human.
I think that would have been a bit shit. Yeah, I don't see this point in doing that.
Well, it's more of the pattern of Enterprise, whereby they tried to do everything originally and they tried to go, it's like, no, you haven't met any of these races. Ah, yeah, but they secretly did meet them all. Ah, yeah. But she's pure Vulcan. Yeah, but we'll make her half Vulcan to match Spock later. You know, it's like they just couldn't leave alone and take the stuff from the other series. And that was their downfall, I think.
Yeah, it was. It was like the...
Yeah.
They could have had a great concept, but the... I don't know what it was. I assume it was the studio kept going, oh, we liked what happened, how much money TNG made us do that again.
Yeah, and actually, it shows that their last series was the best viewing figures, and I think if they'd had those viewing figures a season earlier, it might have kept going. And that's when they did something really original with the indie plot.
Was it the best viewing figures the fourth season?
I thought it was Spike in the last series. Yeah, I might be wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah, it picked back up in fourth season.
I mean, the quality of the third, show.
I think they allowed them to do a last series, but they
it didn't get cancelled. Yeah, third season did just enough for them to get renewed, but then I don't think it.
Just get one more season,
they renewed for one more season and then it would end there. But when it garnered better viewing figures, there was hopes. That's why there was all the campaigns, because there was hope they would change their mind, but they'd already pre-canceled it before. And I think it was something to do with as well, they were already taking sets down and stuff. So even if they had a mind to, which I don't think they really did, it was too
complicated. So I like how we've got the three different Vulcans and the different interactions. Like we've got, I'm just going to call it T'Pol. We've got the main Vulcan guy who is completely integrating into humanity, and to the extent that he begins a relationship with a human woman. We've got T'Pol, who's kind of in the middle. And then we've got the grumpy old one who just doesn't do anything for the whole episode. He just sits back in the house to the point that you've more or less forgotten he's there by the time he comes back at the end.
Well, in the very minute they land, the guy who's gets into kind of humanity, basically, the first thing he says before anything, they've literally just this landed, they have no idea if they're going to be able to get rescued, whatever else, and he just goes, it's like, well, we could kill that animal and eat it. It's like, you literally just landed. It's like that episode of South Park where they take the piss out of a live, where they've literally just landed. It's like, oh, we're not going to be rescued for an hour, we better eat him. It's like, what, have you got a blood sugar problem or something?
Yeah.
You
know? Oh, there's the episode.
That's someone
of the
who
American...
always really wanted to try meat and just needed the excuse, you know, basically.
There's the episode of The American Office where Dwight and Pam get stuck in a lift, and immediately Dwight says, we need to establish a urine corner, and he just starts pissing in the corner.
It's that, it is. It's like, for fuck's sake, man, give it 5 minutes.
Right, we're here. Come on, let's go kill him. Let's kill Bambi and eat him. But yeah, I like this character though, because he goes to baseball games. He likes I Love Lucy, which of course, I Love Lucy exist in the Star Trek universe?
Yeah, I think it's very meta to put. I Love Lucy in when they've gone back in time, and I think it's fitting that that is their favorite show to watch.
Yeah,
I mean, they did a lovely sort of version of this in a bit more direct, but in Doctor Who in Remembrance of Daleks.
Yes.
Whatever 25th, and it was one of the anniversaries.
Yeah,
but like they go back to when Hartnell left Earth, and it's like they're just about to turn the TV off, and it's like, and now for a brand new science fiction TV series, Doctor, and they just switch the TV off. Just
yeah.
Or yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's good fun. I like that episode.
It's nice.
That's a really good one. Yeah, so then there's an explosion in the mine. And they have a brief debate about, can we use a phaser to help them? And yes, they do, is the outcome.
Yeah, it doesn't take... It's sort of like, look, I'm going to do it, so you either help me do it... I don't sort of like give away that I'm using a phaser, that we keep it discreet. Or I'm going to do it and I might be sane, so you need to help me to do this because I am doing it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's sort of like the last big event really before they get contacted. And it's like, right, you've got to go home. And T'Pol just sort of summarizes from there, like, you know, he became a hero, but no one ever found out who he really was. And he doesn't want to go. And ultimately, they tell the other Vulcans that he's died. So
he died as well in the crash.
He remained on Earth. And then T'Pol decides to invent Velcro, which is that's a bit out of left field, but.
Yeah, let's create the Prime Directive.
I don't know why this particularly annoyed me, stuck with me certainly, but they had this episode and there was an episode of Sliders where they also, Rembrandt, if anyone remembers Sliders, decides that aliens created Velcro and they have, it was one of the worst later episodes, so they actually had an alien at the end of the episode in that dimension who had discovered Velcro.
All right.
And it's like, it was the same joke and they were about the same time. And I just think it was a coincidence, but I was like, why Velcro? Why do they think Velcro's...
Velcro's actually really good and it fits in with... Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future that there'll be no zips and no buttons on any clothes, that you'll just pull them open. And that
that's true. It was all interesting reference. Yeah, it was all about there's no zips.
No zips, no buttons, everything. So you can just... So Velcro fits into that really well.
Elliot, I will say genius. I'm not sure I trust the Enterprise writers to have thought through that much, but they did do I Love Lucy, so maybe. I don't know.
Maybe. Into a Gene Roddenberry vision.
No, it does. Nicely done. Yeah, I like it.
It all kind of doesn't matter because then at the end, T'Pol's like, but I might have made it all up.
But then at the end, she shows the bag from that. That she still had, so
she does still have the bag, so it's implied that she didn't make it all. What she should have done, though, she should have said, maybe I made it all up, then she should have gone and then come back and gone,
See, my interjection isn't going to be as funny as that. And that, well, I mean, it isn't funny, but it's like, hey, invitation only. Do you wish to be on my new Instagram? Answer yes or no.
I'm quite happy to be added to an Instagram.
Instagram. Are we on Instagram with Retrek? Probably.
I'm not sure. Probably.
And we're on Threads. We're not on Threads. We're on Blue Sky.
We're not on Threads. I don't know. Have a look for us. We might well be on there.
But I was just going to say, I mean, one thing which I thought was, I almost thought was a plot hole, but I've decided along the lines of what Elliot was saying, funny enough, and the other kind of links to Star Trek. Because Archer and Trip go, it's like, but how comes they didn't, what, do they have a special doctor? How comes they didn't find the, you know, the bones of him afterwards, all this stuff? And they get around it by her saying it was a story, but then she reveals to the camera effectively that it wasn't.
Yeah.
But I think this is like the transporters with the Heisenberg compensators. You sort of get around the problem by kind of like... using the name of the problem. So it's like, it's just a story. It's like, but it wasn't really. Then what happened with all that stuff? Now we've gone past that now. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It's a sort of get out of jail free card, you know, somehow.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it, yeah, you're right. Then it leaves you going, but hang on, if it wasn't a story.
He must have had an agreement for someone to phaser his own corpse and then
destroy the phaser.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah.
It's all very like 150 years.
Oh, maybe.
It could have had another 150 years. So this is 1953, is it, with Sputnik?
Yeah, so he could have waited until actual first contact.
No, well, it'd been there till first contact and another 30-40 years afterwards, so he could have quite easily vanished by then as a Vulcan.
Oh, you know what they should have done then? The end of the episode should have been to Paul getting a message from him and he's still alive now or something.
I did think of something like that. Maybe he was still alive.
I don't think he'd still be alive by Enterprise, but he would have quite easily been still alive by the time of first contact, and then we've got to assume that more Vulcans came to Earth after first contact, that we started getting Vulcans. So it's quite easy for him to vanish at that point, very old, or the Vulcans just to sort of like hide him away, that they find him. Yeah, let's get rid of him now.
He can be recreated.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is, if there isn't a setting on Starfleet phasers to self-destruct without exploding, like, you know, basically implode to remove evidence in case of
disintegrate.
Basically, there should be a disintegrate setting in this case, because there's always a phaser or a tricorder or something.
Yes, being
you should just have a setting where you can remotely get it to destroy itself subtly.
Well, that's the thing in the original handbook for Star Trek, wasn't it, with the tricorder? What does the tricorder do? And the answer is whatever Gene needs it to do.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the song Screwdriver from Doug Pivots. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you want.
Yeah. He should have. I'm just thinking.
No, I think it'd be alive for contact.
He's probably.
He might have been starting to come down with Sarek's disease as well by the time the Vulcans got there. He'd been getting onto that age. So they maybe just sort of like quietly spirited him away and let him go mad on Vulcan on his own.
He's probably thought about
somewhere
it,
right now, going, it's like, hey, it's not my disease. I just got it. It's not my disease. You know.
He's probably thought about it and then thought, bollocks, she invented Velcro, so I ain't got all to answer for if I'm me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do
like the fact that his whole thing was to inspire the next generation. That seemed very Vulcan still, even though he's more fascinating than he should be. He's not obeying whatever version of the Prime Directive Vulcans have. It seems very Vulcan to be fascinated and be curious and want to help someone in that way. Because his mind was always like, oh, there's a. It was almost like he was solving the problems of this guy's life. You know, it's very Vulcan way of doing it.
To be fair, Scotty did give away the formula for transforming to aluminum.
Aluminum,
But we have actually got transparent aluminium now.
There you go. Yeah. Well,
Scotty can do anything. Prime Directive doesn't apply to Scotty. I think it's written in the small fine print.
Yeah. I do enjoy that episode. I think, like Squee, what you said at the start, I don't think you're wrong in that it's a bit of a rehash and whatnot, but you've got a grade on a scale, and when we're talking season 2 Enterprise, a decent episode is a very good episode when you look at where it is. So while it may not be the best episode of Star Trek, it's one of the better from this period of Enterprise, I would.
If you look at early season 2 episodes of all the shows, TOS not included, but from that period, a season 2 episode was really strong.
Oh yeah, I think what I need to do is, next time we're going to cover an Enterprise episode, can we just all go how shit it's going to be? Because I keep on going in really excited because we don't have Enterprise that often. And I'm always disappointed because I'm going, this one I remember being really good. And it's just like, I need to think it's going to be bad.
Got,
and then I'll really enjoy
exactly.
It.
You've got to approach it the way I do, Enterprise.
Like,
and then you go
the other way of maybe I've been too harsh.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I haven't.
No, no one has ever said Enterprise is their favorite show of Star Trek. Apart from people who are lying.
Well, that's because you haven't got faith in the heart, though, Elliot. You don't believe. Yeah.
No, but Enterprise had a lot of faults. A lot of faults. Some of it, when it first started, it could have been brilliant, but then it just wasn't.
Well, that's the thing.
I think that's a fair summary.
The thing is, I think there's some sort of nostalgia where I kind of seem to remember there were some episodes which were really great. And even during the Zindi arc, which is one of the strongest periods,
what was really
most of the episodes have some shit bits in them, even then. And it's like, I need to go in low. Low expectations.
What Enterprise did really well that TNG was rubbish at, Voyager failed at, and DS9 didn't really try was during the Zindi arc, because the Enterprise got attacked, they put more damage on the ship and they carried it on to the next episode.
Yeah, that was cool.
Because they'd gone to full CGI by that point. It was a fully CGI ship. So you didn't have a model that could put damage on it without having to build a new model. Or
the only thing I'm going to say,
which is why you didn't get it previously.
I'm just saying, for any right decision like that, like you say, I like lasting damage. That was really good. But for anything like that, you also get, though, the fact that they decided they would have manual operated doors when we have automatic doors now. Like, yeah. I mean, for fuck's sake, yeah. I get you're trying to say it's an earlier time, so you haven't got the tech you have in the future. I like the idea, but at least give them the tech we've got fucking now, you morons. I'm sorry, that pissed me off every time. It's like, oh, the doors you could actually open manually here. Waitrose has got automatic doors.
Well, of course, Waitrose.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God, shit. I've been in my hometown.
I'm sorry.
I moved back to my hometown of Romsey.
Staffling does not have Waitrose budget.
I've only been in Romsey for a month and I've got this middle class already.
Milk or a loaf of bread.
I've been back in Romsey for one month.
That's all it took. And I've been middle classified.
We will just go work at McDonald's and it'll make you working class. We will wrap it up there then. We will be back next week to talk about the next episode of Lower Deck and wherever that leads us.
And Merry Christmas, Rose.
Merry Christmas. You can get in touch with us. We are retrekpod@gmail.com. We are at retrekpod, etc. on Blue Sky. You can find us on the other socials and Retrek Model Studios on YouTube.
Which is currently being rebuilt. Is in the process of being built. I have started filming. I am going to put a small one out today or tomorrow because I bought myself a moving-in present. Which excellent. I think a lot of the Star Trek fans might be interested in seeing what I bought myself.
Guess he's nearly back again.
Nearly. And Dr. Squee, what have we got going on the Dr. Squee show?
Well, I sort of trailed last week. So this weekend, me and you did a lovely 2.5 hour plus, I think it was in the end, at the rest of Twin Peaks and Return. Fucking wonderful time talking about that. Please, it was great fun. If you've ever watched it, I would recommend. One which was going to go out last week, but events with mum coming home from hospital kind of overtook. But tomorrow I'm going to put up my interview with a sports broadcaster whose name's escaped me again. Sports broadcaster who's talking about pancreatic cancer's campaign to get... No, it's not Vine.
I remember you saying who it was.
I remember
that. I thought straight away I know him.
For some reason, I've got nine blindness right now. But anyway, he talked about, like, there's a campaign So basically, a lot of men, when they're going to football, end up leaving early or canceling plans to go to the football because there's a huge problem with bladder problems with men, which doesn't get talked about. So it's actually a really cool campaign. And he also talks about a legendary career with BBC, ITV and Sky. It's one not to be missed. It's really great. And so, I'm so sorry. I keep on forgetting the guy's name. Anyway.
Okay. And thanks for trekking with us this time. We'll see you next time on the retrek.
Thank you. Goodbye.
LLP and drag off.
Ah.